Yeah, it's a shame to God.
Every time we play that song, it's stuck in my head. It's similar to how we started playing Line in the Sand for Lemmy once he passed away. Yeah, instantly stuck in my head. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is June 13th, 2016. I had to take a look at the date in front of me before I realized what day it was. Anywho, this is the Raw Reaction. You are listening to DeMarco Wrestling Radio. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, the third man, Rick Balin. Welcome back, sir.
Making his grand return. I miss you guys.
I don't know about grand, but we'll go with return, that's for sure.
Oh,
and
I am grand. Come on now.
And the most valuable producer, Jimmy Christopher, who will be joining us for predictions a little bit later.
Fine. I wasn't going to say hello anyway. Fuck you too, Harry.
What do you do? I'm going to get muted here in a few seconds. I see this one coming on.
You're
the writing
right
on the wall on this one.
You are damn right.
All right, let's go ahead and get into our first caller here because this is a go-home episode of Monday Night Raw. So, you ready?
Yeah, I'm here, Harry. What's going on?
All right, we got 8 matches to get through, so let's hit them, shall we?
Yep.
All right, pre-show match number 1, allegedly, Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, God, do we need to have this again? This just makes me sick and realize WWE continues to waste both of these guys in every turn. However, Corbin will win this time and finally end this feud, I hope, once and for all.
Yeah, we're really early into the show, but I'm going to go ahead and drop the first one. Can we put a fucking bullet in this already? Like, for real. All right, that might be an insensitive choice of phrase, given recent events. Moving on. Pre-show match number 2 is Apollo Crews and Sheamus.
You know what? Tell Sheamus to trim the beard, get rid of the mohawk, and just wrestle decent instead of looking like a jackass red rooster. Apollo Crews will win.
I actually quite enjoy his red rooster look. It's a cock-a-doodle-doo for me. All right, moving on. Money in the Bank.
You know what? This is a tough one. However, I'm going to go with Cesaro.
All right. The four-way for the tag team titles.
I want to say Enzo and Cass, and I think they should win here, but I think it's going to be the club.
All right. How about the U.S. title match, Rusev and Titus?
Titus by DQ. Lana's going to stick her nose where it doesn't belong, as always.
So Titus wins, but Rusev retains.
Right.
Okay. Women's tag team match.
Becky and Natty. I'm tired of Charlotte and Dana as the blonde bimbo bitches that they are. I kind of saw a little tease tonight of a breakup. I don't know if it's a setup, however, then I have a feeling something's going to happen here where Dana and Charlotte are going to have a falling out.
I think tonight was a red herring. I'll mention more about that when I go into my predictions. It is the match 15 years in the making, John Cena, AJ Styles.
AJ's lost 2 in a row. He cannot lose 3 here. I mean, he has to get back on track here. He's had a pretty good year so far. However, I think his year would be capped off and solidified if he beats Cena. He will beat Cena here, I feel.
And your main event for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship is Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins.
Rollins, but watch out. Someone might cash in, though, maybe.
If Rollins wins the title on his first pay-per-view back, ain't nobody cashing in on him. I'm just saying that right now. All right, JD, we'll talk to you next Monday night, sir.
All right, Harry, have a good night.
Do the same. All right. Rick, shall we get into the bulk of the show, or do you want to go ahead and do some more predictions? Do we have another caller ready for predictions? Because somebody said he was supposed to call at the start of the show.
We have no callers, Harry.
I'm willing to bet he probably fell asleep. That freaking jabroni. Whatever.
Rick, you ready to talk about Raw?
I am ready. Let's talk about Raw, man.
It's only been 2 weeks for you, so let's talk about Raw. We opened the show tonight with the New Day. Well, okay, first we actually opened the show with the WWE paying tribute to the victims of the horrible tragedy that occurred in Orlando on Sunday, and obviously, or Sunday, late Sunday, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, depending on the time frame. I haven't heard a specific time frame yet, but regardless, obviously, thoughts and prayers go out to the family members of the victims, and I send the sincerest wishes for comfort to any of the family members as well, that they may find peace, however it is that they choose to find it in these times. Another unnecessary tragedy here in this country. All right, moving on. Let's get away from that. Let's actually talk about the reason we came here to talk about tonight, the actual show itself. And we open with the New Day and the long-awaited, and Tony's going to be pissed he missed this, individual confrontation between the New Day and Enzo and Cass. Your thoughts?
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, it was pretty good. They even made reference to it about finally getting the jousting of wits between Enzo and the New Day. And, you know, it was what I guess we all kind of expected it to be. It was a lot of fun, a lot of silliness going on in the ring. And I thought it was a good contrast with Enzo and Cass and the New Day in there doing their whole stick together being, you know, silly, fun, funny, entertaining. And then out comes their opponents for tonight, which was the Vaudevillains and the Club, which is not silly, which is surprising to say about the Vaudevillains here, because when they came in, they're portrayed, at least in my eyes, as kind of a stupid, gimmicky team. But now, you know, they kind of adjusted their Vaudevillain stick to focus on them just being manly. You know, kind of no-nonsense, a bygone era, they call it. And the Club has that same kind of mentality where it's all business with them. And I like the contrast between the serious teams and the fun teams here.
I mean, technically speaking, the Club kind of showed that they can show some personality in the mic work that they did with the New Day, or not with the New Day, excuse me, with Enzo and Cass on SmackDown. I really enjoyed that. So I think that there's potential for possibly some personality to come out of the Club. However, I do believe that it would probably be better in their long-term interest for them to remain more serious rather than attempting to portray humor towards their characters when their characters are involved with a guy like AJ Styles, who's pushing the main event level of the WWE right now and could be firmly established in said main event level with a victory this Sunday. How about the match itself, Frick? What did you think of that?
The match was good. I really enjoyed the match. You know, I'm a fan of the Club, and I'm glad they got the win here. You know, I like their style, and I like what they bring to the tag team division. Enzo looked good. Cass, amazing as usual. It was a solid match.
Are you worried that the Club winning, getting the pinfall in the match tonight means that they're not going to win the tag titles on Sunday?
Yeah, there's always been that thought that, you know, whoever goes over on Raw doesn't go over on the pay-per-view. I've never really bought that much into that theory, and I understand that statistically that theory probably is something to believe in, but I think in a four-way match like this, and with the Club, you know, being a new team to the WWE, at least to some fans that haven't really seen them, I think the more wins under their belt, the better, especially if they're considering giving them the titles come Sunday. I don't think just them winning a 8-man tag, you know, going over on Raw necessarily means that they're going to not be able to go over on the pay-per-view.
I'm just concerned about that because I feel like I would argue that the Bullet Club is the hottest heel tag team in the division right now,
And the tag team division is in desperate need of some shakeup because I kind of think that to an extent the New Day gets a little stagnated when they're working against the same kind of competition here. And as much as I'm interested in the New Day versus Enzo and Cass, I don't think the time is right for it yet.
Right, and I agree with that. And I'm also of the assessment that, you know, I think it's time that the New Day's drop those titles and have someone else have a turn with it as tag team champions. The New Day has been tag team champions for a long time now, and while I love them, they're entertaining as hell, and they're one of my favorite tag teams. Like you said before, their reign is starting to get a little stagnant, and I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to get a fresh team like the Club, the boost of the tag team championship, just to elevate them a little bit that much more.
Jimmy C, do you want to chime in on the tag team division here since it's kind of your thing? I know you're in the middle of something right now, but I figured I'd give you the opportunity to chime in here since we started the show talking tag teams.
All right, shut up then. I'll talk. My whole thing right now is, and I'll evaluate myself by the time we get to the predictions, but I do not see New Day holding on to the tag titles come Sunday, but I'm going in a different direction as far as who I believe will win. And I think either way, a different team holding those titles will definitely shake things up. And hopefully that will be the direction they decide to go with, only because the tag team division needs another spark. Now, it's not that the New Day can't hold their own as an entertaining group, obviously, but the WWE needs another tag team that are going to draw fans, draw attention, and become that next group that the fans either love or hate and get a reaction out of, because right now there's really not much.
Jimmy,
yeah,
see,
exactly. Go ahead, Rick.
I wanted to ask. Well, I just want to ask Jimmy's opinion on the whole theory of if you go over on Raw, you won't be going over on the pay-per-view. Do you buy much stock into that?
I do. I believe that if a person or team goes over on Raw, they are probably not going over on the pay-per-view or the go-home show, going over on the pay-per-view. But that's only if, you know, for some fuck reason. I hate when WWE books people to face each other on the go-home show that are going to face each other at the pay-per-view. Drives me crazy. Cannot stand it. And the tag team division, the tag team match tonight was one of those moments. I don't need them all in the ring at the same time because I don't need to see a whole bunch of stuff that I'm going to see Sunday. Show me something new. But yes, Rick, I am a big advocate of, chances are if you win on the go-home show, you won't win the come pay-per-view.
Been a long-standing theory between wrestling fans, never publicly acknowledged by the WWE or anything, obviously, but the long-standing theory has always been the whole he who's over on the go-home loses at the pay-per-view. So it'll be interesting to see if they do decide to keep those belts on the New Day. And the one thing that I worried about, the fact that they might keep the belts on the New Day, is they keep constantly bringing up Paul London and Brian Kendrick's record reign as tag team champions, and the New Day are within 9 weeks of breaking that record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you convinced me there. They're probably going to hold the titles just to break that record because they like to break records.
Especially when they're records of people that the WWE is not in good favor with. I think Kendrick is still associated with the company. I know Paul London has no association with the WWE at all these days.
Right.
So, the next thing that I want to bring up, Rick, is Corporate Kane returned tonight. I'm sorry. Am I the only one who sees genuine potential in him as a general manager character? I freaking love it. Especially if he could be as entertaining as he was tonight.
I liked his interaction with Shane, especially considering their past, and I was really excited that they even brought it up, the car battery to the testicles, which happened right here in Lafayette, which I got to witness firsthand as a skater in the Cajun Dome when that occurred. But, yeah, that was some fun stuff. And what it appears to me that they're doing, just because they started it off with Teddy Long last week and now Kane this week, I think they're going to just parade around a bunch of former general managers slash authority figures who want that job of SmackDown GM, only to humiliate them, emasculate them, send them packing. You know, it could make for some pretty entertaining backstage segments as the weeks to come, until we finally find out who really will be running SmackDown. And I have a feeling it's either going to be Stephanie or Shane, and we'll probably make a decision via some type of stipulation and some type of match where a wrestler is representing one of the McMahons.
I don't think that we're going to see the brand extension take place until after SummerSlam. I think we'll get the draft when they say we're going to get the draft, but I don't think the full brand extension is going to take place until SummerSlam. And I would imagine that they're probably going to battle over who's going to get what shows at SummerSlam itself in one of the more marquee-level matches. That would not surprise me in the very least. The other thing that I did want to point out here is I think you were spot on with your prediction as far as the previous general managers coming back. I had that exact same thought myself. And honestly, I'm looking forward to it because there are a lot of people that can drag out of mothballs that I think people would get a good reaction for. People like John Laurinaitis, people like Eric Bischoff, people like possibly having a one-time appearance from ESPN's Jonathan Coachman.
Yep, and Vicky Guerrero, that'd be a good one.
William Regal, perhaps, even though he's more focused on NXT these days. But it was, I definitely agree with your whole process as far as it leading to, as far as it leading to other previous general managers showing up between now and when the brand extension takes place, whenever it does officially become confirmed. My question to you, real quick, is: are you okay with Shane and Stephanie running the shows, or would you like to see general manager figures with Shane and Stephanie as overarching higher powers?
I mean, I don't want to see Shane and Stephanie co-run Raw while someone else runs SmackDown. The managing aspect of the McMahons is kind of starting to lose its luster with me. You know, I liked the fact that they were getting along at first, and it was making for some better shows where we weren't bogged down with a struggle of power storyline. And I can already see the writing on the wall. I can see them starting to slowly, or not even slowly, but they're starting to bicker more and more and more. And some of it, in all honesty, and you might disagree with me, but sometimes Shane comes off as the little prick while Stephanie is like, you're kind of siding with her for a little bit. Like, she's actually seems like she's trying to make this work, and Shane's just cutting her down every chance he gets. It's starting to kind of shift into some kind of weird dynamics where, you know, I'm used to hating Stephanie, and Shane is obviously supposed to be the babyface in all of this. But now it's like Stephanie looks like she's actually legitimately trying to make it work with Shane, and he's just not having it with her. And it's starting to irritate me a little bit, and I'm personally starting to get irritated with Shano.
I don't think that we need to go down the route of having Shane and Stephanie constantly on television. I'd be more okay with the general managers taking over the two respective programs and then Shane and Stephanie appearing on occasion rather than being the overarching theme of the show.
So what you're advocating is, you're advocating for a whole different Raw GM and a different SmackDown GM, and Shane and Stephanie just being.
Shane and Stephanie are the bosses, kind of like Vince was back in 2002, but when you had when you had Stephanie and Bischoff as the general managers.
I like the idea, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think Shane and Stephanie are going to run their respective shows.
More than likely, I agree with that. All right, so We'll talk more about Corporate Kane's interaction a little bit later on in the show, because there is a few things to discuss about Corporate Kane's involvement.
Oh, that and he had said, a letter of recommendation from The Undertaker.
Somehow, I don't think The Undertaker's sitting at a computer typing letters of recommendation, but hey, more power to him.
And signing his name as The Undertaker.
Oh, no, that I fully believe, that he would sign his name as The Undertaker. I 100% buy that as legitimate. John, can you hear me, man?
I can.
What's up?
Not much, brother, not much. Just here to get my Money in the Bank predictions in.
All right, let's do this. Pre-show match number one, Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler.
I have to say Corbin.
Pre-show match number two, and the actual interesting pre-show match on the show, Apollo Crews and Sheamus.
Yeah, you're right, Harry. Very interesting. But Apollo Crews gets the win here.
All right, let's go to the Money in the Bank match.
I see Ambrose winning it, but I think KO might take the win here.
I need an official prediction.
I think if it comes down to it, it's going to go to Ambrose.
Okay. Tag titles.
What? Tag title? Oh, yeah. I have to go with my favorite team, my new favorite team, the Club. U.S. title. I'm betting it's going to be Titus, but I think you might have Lana involved, so Titus could win out on a DQ or count out.
Pretty much the same prediction JD made. Women's title, or women's tag team match, excuse me.
And you know I'm not even going to vote for Charlotte or Dana. I'm voting for Natalya and Becky Lynch.
All right. The match 15 years in the making. It is Cena and AJ Styles.
Oh, do I really need to answer that one? It's going to be AJ Styles that gets the big one here and shows Cena what he's all about.
Vince McMahon thinking here. I'm telling you guys, we'll talk more about it when it's my turn to do these predictions, but I'm telling you guys, I think you're way off base here. Main event for the WWE World Heavyweight title.
I'm saying Rollins.
All right, since you picked Ambrose, I'm curious. Does what Ambrose said in tonight's episode of the Ambrose Asylum come to fruition? Does he cash in at Money in the Bank?
Yeah, it's possible.
All right, John, we'll talk to you next Monday, sir.
See you later, sir.
Yes, sir. All right. Hold on, let me find my place in the format. Okay, speaking of Titus O'Neil, let's talk about the U.S. title scene right now and the fact that, is it just me or are they back to trying to make Rusev look like a badass again?
Rusev has always looked like a badass. Yeah, he had that little stint with the League of Nations, but he was the badass in the League of Nations. And while the League of Nations might have been a joke, Rusev has always been my favorite Bulgarian brute. Now take the fish, Harry.
Between the way that he treated Kalisto like his own personal little bitch, and the way that he's basically been dominating most of the physical interaction with Titus, with the exception of the sucker punch that Titus got in on an episode of SmackDown. The last few times they've interacted on Raw, Rusev has stood tall. I really enjoyed the way that they've been booking Rusev's character. Unfortunately, it also makes me really concerned that this might be a sign of the fact that they're about to take the U.S. title off of him. And I do believe that he's been doing phenomenal work as the U.S. champion. This belt has completely rejuvenated him inside of the ring and as a character.
I don't think so. I think him showing all this dominance over Titus is a part of the punishment that Titus is still probably getting for hugging Vince McMahon. You know, I think if it is anybody else, there might have been more back and forth to it. But I think Rusev, and we'll get into our official predictions later, but I'm pretty positive Rusev is going to go over on Titus here.
I just want to state for the record that I hope to God Rusev goes over on Titus. Anybody who knows me knows that I am not a fan of Titus O'Neil as a singles worker. I enjoy him in tag team matches, and I enjoy him as a character. As a Florida Gator fan myself, I respect the fact that he was a member of a national championship Florida Gator team, but as a singles wrestler, plain and simple, he does not interest me. So let's talk about the big selling point for tonight's episode of Raw, Rick.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Ambrose Asylum that featured all three former members of the Shield. I was perfectly okay with everything that happened here until the physical interaction at the end. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I disagreed. I had no problem with the physical interaction. First of all, the verbal interaction, I got to say, between these three guys was spot on. I think Roman Reigns had some of his best mic work to date. He actually sounded good on the mic, except for just the few times where he uses the guy. And that's not so much his fault. That's just a catchphrase that they're trying to get over. So I'm sure they want him to say the guy as much as they can. I just hate the catchphrase personally. But I think Reigns did a great job. Rollins did a great job. And Ambrose, he just portrays that crazy lunatic so well. He's so natural on the mic. Everything came off naturally, I have to say. And the physical part of it all, I'm not against it because I'm glad that they show Ambrose. We already know that out of the three, Ambrose and Roman are best friends. They've shown that on screen before. They're buddy-buddy, and Seth is the odd man out. And I'm glad we got to see that Ambrose is willing to go after his friend for the most important prize in wrestling, the WWE World Heavyweight title. And Ambrose, he's confident he's going to get that Money in the Bank briefcase and cash it in. And it doesn't matter if it's Rollins or Reigns. He's going to try to cash it in on either one of them.
I mean, I can agree with you on that regard, but the thing about it was is if you believe the rumors, and these are just rumors, and obviously there may be merit to them, there may not be. We don't know. As they say, everything is speculation until it becomes fact. This is your rumored main event of WrestleMania 33. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose in a triple threat match. I am okay if you wanted to do some physical interaction between Reigns and Rollins. Minimal, sure, but some physical interaction, especially to show that Seth's knee is good to go for Sunday. I would not have had Ambrose involved with them here. And if you're going to have Ambrose involved with them, I wouldn't have had Ambrose involved with them physically until he actually wins Money in the Bank, should that happen this Sunday.
Well, look, they can, it's, what are we? We're in June. We got a whole year almost, or 9 months now, I guess, away to WrestleMania. If they want to have a little skirmish here, that's not going to mess up the rumored WrestleMania main event. And then, as you said, it's just a rumor. I think it's important to put Ambrose here because for this reason. He had a lot of momentum going into that match against Brock Lesnar. And I think we all agreed that they made the absolute worst booking decision when he lost to Brock Lesnar in the fashion that he lost. After that, I guess I would say he lost a little bit of steam and lost a little bit of that main event aura that could have been kept around him. Now, he went into his feud with Jericho, and I got to say, I don't think just winning that feud with Jericho did enough to actually look at him as a potential future champion. Winning the Money in the Bank briefcase will help, but I think interacting with two guys who are champions and main event status players is going to help him even more, because Dean Ambrose hasn't quite reached that level of success that Rollins and Reigns has, and he needs to show that he's on equal playing field with them.
All right, I can kind of see where you're coming from, and I completely agree about Ambrose's main event aura being gone after what happened against Lesnar. I completely agree with that. But at the same time, I think having him win Money in the Bank before he was physically interacted between the two of these guys might have been a better decision, in my opinion. I don't necessarily disagree with the decision, but personally, I didn't like it. We move on. And it is the non-title match between Charlotte and Paige. I feel bad for Paige in that she has decent matches when she's on television. She's just so inconsistently on television anymore that it's really hard to care about her.
Right. Well, I wanted to talk about this match in particular. And I guess a problem with this match.
Wait. Well, I guess in that particular case, let's move into the Cajun Corner.
Well, yeah, you can label this the Cajun Corner if you'd like. I'm just going to go off on a little, I wouldn't necessarily call it a rant. I don't think I rant. I don't know. But I'm just going to discuss what I thought about this match. I think we've all mentioned this once or twice before in the podcast about champions losing matches and whether we think it's right or wrong. You know, if you're the champion, you probably shouldn't lose a match, especially if it's a match against someone like Paige. And that's not talking bad about Paige, but as Harry mentioned before, she's been inconsistently on and off television. She's not someone that you think of as a Divas contender at this moment. You know, she's someone that the champion should probably defeat. Now, I am okay with champions losing matches if it's to further a storyline that they're trying to tell. And I think with here, with Dana Brooke being the one to throw Charlotte back in the ring and essentially causing her loss, it's starting to show a tension between Dana and Charlotte. I understand. I could forgive that loss, I guess I would say. You know, that loss furthers a storyline that's probably going to be explored at the pay-per-view between Charlotte and Dana Brooke, some tension. But what I didn't like about the match, though, regardless of who won or who lost, was Charlotte looked like a joke. You know, this kind of goes back to the what we just talked about, Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar. Dean lost to Brock Lesnar, but it wasn't that he lost so much as the way he lost. Charlotte loses because Dana throws her in, but if you look at the body of the match, Charlotte never got offense on Paige. What Charlotte kept going for a figure four anytime Paige was on her back, which, why? You know, usually you try to beat down your opponent a little bit before you try to lock in your finishing move. I think she went for three figure fours, and that was every time Paige was on her back. She went for the figure four. The first time Paige rolled her up. The second time Paige punched her. The third time Paige kicked her out the ring. Charlotte did no offense that I can remember, except for maybe knocking Paige down and then going for a figure four. Paige just dominated the matchup, and it made the champion look bad. And that's all I had to say about that segment.
I have nothing to add here, although I think this is a gigantic red herring going into this Sunday, and I'll talk about that in my predictions, and we'll move on from there. Speaking of this particular segment, they had a backstage segment between the two of them, and Charlotte slipped and called her an assistant and then corrected herself with protege, which I think is once again trying to tease the signs of dissension between the two of them. There was also, in my opinion, a really good backstage segment between Sami Zayn and Cesaro. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, if you agree with me or not on Rick, is do you think Cesaro is getting better on the microphone?
Yeah, I do, actually. And I wouldn't even necessarily just point to that backstage segment, but I would point to his guest ring announcer spot as well. I think he is getting more comfortable. He's still a little hard to not hard to understand because he speaks good English, but the accent kind of throws you off a little bit in the way that he speaks. I don't know. But, yeah, he does seem a little bit more sure of himself and more confident on the mic, and I would say that his mic work is getting better, yes.
That's the important thing here, because I was talking to one of my friends, Kyle, who's been a guest on the show before, my buddy Kyle Fitta, who lives up in Massachusetts. And I asked him, is there anything that Cesaro can't do? And his response to me was cut a promo. And my thought process to that is, okay, maybe, but at the same time, when it comes to these backstage segments and stuff, he's definitely getting a lot better. His in-ring microphone work still needs work. But when it comes to these personality-driven backstage segments that he's been having lately, frankly, I think he's been knocking them out of the park. So I wanted to take a quick moment and give credit where credit was due here to Cesaro, and then we'll talk more about his match with Sami Zayn here in a few moments. Let's also move on to our next match here, and our next match is going to take us into Harry's Hit. I missed my sound effect, Rick.
I don't think I've
you
ever
remember
heard the sound effect.
You don't remember the days of the sound effect?
How did Harry's Hit sound effect go? Maybe
it
we could
was
just Nelly. Dip it.
It was Nelly from The Longest Yard.
Uh-huh.
Boom, oh, here comes the boom, oh, here comes the Harry's
okay.
Hit. It was freaking
anyway,
awesome.
We need sound effect. I would like to know what a Cajun Corner sound effect would sound like.
You remember Skinner, Steve Carn?
Yeah.
His music and then the words Cajun Corner at the end.
All right,
moving on. Let's get into Harry's Hit. And Harry's Hit is going to focus on the Sheamus and Zack Ryder match, but more specifically, the aftermath of said. And by that, I mean the fact that Apollo Crews came out and beat Sheamus's ass. They have been incredibly start and stop on this guy, by which I mean he debuted the night after WrestleMania, and for a couple of weeks he was all over both Raw and SmackDown. And then seemingly sometime around Payback, they lost interest in him, and he completely disappeared from television, only now recently starting to come back onto television. My question is if you did not have a more permanent spot for him, and it looks like this may be where they're going for Apollo, to feud with the veterans who don't necessarily agree with the younger guys getting the opportunities that they're getting nowadays. If you didn't have this set up in from the beginning for Apollo, why did you bring him up as early as you did? The work that he's done with Sheamus, I don't know about you, but I've actually really enjoyed this feud. And I'm actually looking forward to the match on Sunday. I think that they have potential to be one of the better matches on a very loaded card. That being said, I'm worried that even after the match at Money in the Bank happens, even if it is on the pre-show, once the match happens, that Apollo is going to get lost in the shuffle once again. Where do you stand on Apollo Crews? Do you think that he's going to be somebody that they can bank on, or do you think that he's going to find himself once again lost in the shuffle, similar to a guy like Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah. This is a topic of discussion I brought up before about the NXT call-ups. And you can look at the track record of all the call-ups that have made their way to the main stage, and the only ones that become successful are the ones that come in with a given storyline. The ones that they just bring in as the debut of the new exciting wrestler from NXT, they usually do fizzle out and don't amount to anything. We've seen this before. We've seen this with Tyler Breeze, and you know, there's other examples as well, and you know, it's just comes to a point where, like you said earlier, why bring them up if you don't have something for them to do or a plan for them? You know, there's writers who it's their job to come up with interesting reasons for these people to be wrestling each other. You know, that's what sports entertainment is about. We're not accustomed to just watching two guys randomly square off into a competitive, predetermined matchup with nothing on the line. You know, that's Vince McMahon had made that remark on the Stone Cold podcast a year ago or so, where he talked about the aspect of sports entertainment is, you know, having a storyline built in to these matches. And they brought Apollo Crews up, and while he looks amazing and he does amazing things, especially for a guy his size, you know, he's not going to get anyone's attention just by winning matches and doing backflips, somersaults, and all this amazing stuff that he can do in the ring just by coming down the aisle with a big smile on his face and no direction.
And that's, I think, the biggest issue that I have is the fact that they have not given Apollo a really super defined character. He finally stood up for himself in this feud with Sheamus, and honestly, I think this feud with Sheamus may have been the proper way to bring him up to the main roster, because it would have established him as a guy that the established veterans on the main roster are threatened by because of his physical gifts, because of his capabilities inside of the ring, even if his promo work, as we've discussed before, is still substandard. This would have been the perfect way to bring him onto the show, and the concern that I have is that by waiting this long to give him an established storyline, to put him into an angle with somebody, he's just going to find himself once again lost in the shuffle once he gets out of the program with Sheamus. And I find that that's going to be completely detrimental to his character.
And you can exchange Apollo Crews with Baron Corbin, and you'd have the same argument. Baron Corbin just came in. He won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal out of nowhere. I don't even know if they announced that he'd be in that match. He had no fanfare, and he had like a little feud with Dolph Ziggler, but that's not going to go anywhere. That's not going anywhere. They're beating it to death. And after he's done with Dolph Ziggler, as you mentioned, it's a rumored kickoff match for Sunday night. Where would he go from there, you know?
And I think just as importantly, will anybody care?
Right.
All right. So we've been kind of skipping over the backstage segments tonight, and the reason for that is we tend to focus on them when we're discussing the matches that they lead into. This next backstage segment leads into a match later on in the show, but I just have to say that I have been really, really enjoying the interaction between Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens over the course of the 4 months that Shane has been back in the WWE. And I'm really, really hoping that if Shane does have another match in him, which I don't know that he does, but if he does, I really hope it's against Kevin Owens.
I could see that, yeah. I like Owens' interaction with just about anybody, just because Owens is probably the best talker. He's the best at reacting to things that are happening around him, which a lot of people don't do. You know, that's a lesson in acting, is not to so much to act, but to react. And I love the way he reacts to everything that's going on around him. He brings so much life to the television screen, and his little mini feud with Shane McMahon, it's very entertaining.
All right, how about the little mini feud that's going on as well between Owens and Del Rio? We can talk more about this during the course of the tag match that's coming up here, but Owens yelling at Del Rio for speaking in Spanish and then yelling back at him in French was fantastic to me.
Yes, it was.
And it goes back to what you were just saying about Owens' ability to react to the other characters around him rather than just taking the lines that he's given and using them. If they do still thoroughly script the promos, I think Owens is one of those guys who they kind of just let do his own thing.
Yeah, I could see that
just because his character comes off so natural on the microphone that it doesn't feel like somebody's writing his lines for him. It feels like he's just being himself, and he's that gigantic of an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
That it makes it work. All right.
And he's a unique character, getting shit heel almost, in the aspect where he's like, does all this backstage politicking, tries to get Del Rio in trouble for being late. You know, he does walk away from fights. But then when he's actually in the fight, in the ring, you don't see him actually cheat too much to win. I think all of his victories come from a clean, you know, pop-up powerbomb where he actually defeats his opponents. You know, you don't see too much feet on the rope or holding the tights or any, like, underhanded tactics. He's just, like, it's something you don't see all the time. I love him.
No, I agree. It's definitely – he has that prize fighter mentality in that he doesn't necessarily want to fight if he doesn't have to, but if he has to, then he's going to go out there and he's going to put forth his best effort.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of putting forth their best effort, Speaking of putting forth their best effort, let's talk Sami Zayn and Cesaro here. Not as great of matches as we've seen them have in the past, I think obviously due to the time constraints here. You saw the, I'm sure you remember their match from the first NXT TakeOver.
Yeah.
And then you compare that match to this match. They had 14 minutes at NXT TakeOver. They had like 4 tonight or 5 with the commercial time or whatever. Well, let me check Larry's listing here because I'm sure he gives an exact time. 8 minutes, which means about 5 of it aired.
You're right.
So I was pretty much right on the button there. But I do want to talk about that finish. Okay. It's one of those moves that you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit on. But God, was it pretty.
Oh, yeah. And it's not the first time we've seen him use that. I don't know if I expected him to win with that. That kind of shocked me. But we've seen him use that move a couple of times. And I agree, that's a pretty move.
As a play-by-play guy, I was asked what I would call it, and technically speaking, it is a cascading sunset bomb, which means it is a roll-through sunset bomb. Pretty much countering what looks like an attempt by a pop-up power bomb for Cesaro, counters it into a sunset bomb, so he rolls through the pop-up into the sunset bomb, so I call it a cascading sunset bomb. That being said, it is gorgeous.
And you know, you prefaced it by saying it's a move you kind of have to suspend your ability of disbelief on. Not necessarily. I mean, it comes off so fast that I actually, you know, would believe you could do that to a human being. it's not as bad as let's say for disbelieving purposes, it's not as bad as Del Rio's stupid corner stop where the opponent has to hold himself up by holding the ropes.
Okay, to be fair, Del Rio's corner stomp makes everybody look like a retard, Del Rio included, so. I fucking hate that move, and we've discussed that numerous times on this show before.
I don't know anybody that likes that move to where I can't believe. I can't believe nobody in the back has like talked to Del Rio. You know, this move is really stupid.
You would think one of his opponents would go up to him and be like, "Yo, man, I'm not taking that. I'm not looking like a tool out there."
Yeah.
All you have to do is let go of the ropes. Yeah,
sorry.
Let go of the ropes. You drop back down into the tree of woe, but he misses on the double stomp. Or to steal a line from Dave Prezak here, it's the tree of Joey Lawrence. Whoa. Sorry. Shout out to my man Dave Prezak. All right. Anywho, moving on. Contract signing, speaking of, you know what the thing was? This is a go-home in every sense of the word. And the reason I say that is, yeah, there were matches, but the two major things that were hyped for this show were the contract signing and were the Ambrose Asylum with all three members of the Shield. I found myself torn about this particular segment. Because while I enjoyed the interaction between Cena and Styles, it definitely seemed like Cena was booked to get the upper hand in terms of the mic work. And AJ's not the strongest microphone performer in the first place. So having him trying to trade barbs back and forth with Cena on the microphone isn't going to do him any favors.
Yeah.
I was just contract signings. Sometimes they're warranted. Here, not so much. I mean, I get that they're building this into a bigger thing, 15 years in the making, a dream match, because these two have never wrestled each other, but I don't know. I've always wanted to see AJ in the WWE, and it's great to see him in the WWE right now. And I guess I know John Cena is the face of the WWE, and he has been for a while now. But I've never really thought about Cena and AJ Styles as, like, my dream match, I guess. So seeing them portray this as a big moment, I don't know. I guess it is a big moment just because it's AJ Styles in the WWE against, like I said, the face of the company. So that makes it a big moment. But when AJ was in TNA or Ring of Honor or whatever else, when I looked at him wanting him to be in the mainstream and I made my dream matches like, oh, I want to see AJ against this guy. I want to see AJ against this guy. Cena was never really on my list, I guess.
I'm going to be inclined to disagree with you, and here's why. The reason I disagree with you is because for the longest time when he was in TNA, AJ Styles was the TNA heavyweight champion. For the longest time when he's been in the WWE, John Cena has been the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. It is a combination of two. And Styles was the TNA champion when TNA was in its prime, when TNA was just starting to try to go head-to-head with the WWE. I don't know if you remember the ill-fated Monday Night Wars in 2010, but the man who was the heavyweight champion when they decided to do that was none other than the phenomenal AJ Styles. So I can kind of see what they're gathering, that this would be a dream match.
But how did you like the two different contracts?
I thought that was stupid and just a way for Cena to emasculate Styles.
I was surprised at the way Cena made it a given. Well, if you sign this contract that allows the club out to the ringside, you're going to beat me. Like, you probably still have an even chance to beat him, even if he had all his cronies around the ring.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if I'd buy the fact that you're an underdog against AJ Styles, even if he has the club at ringside. I agree with you.
Exactly.
All right, so we move on. The tag team match that I just mentioned a little bit earlier with the backstage segment happens here, and that is Owens and Del Rio taking on the Lucha Dragons, where if Owens and Del Rio lose, they lose their spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Now, I just want to say that for no second did I believe that the Lucha Dragons were going to take Owens and Del Rio's spot. That being said, Kevin Owens shined in this match.
Yeah. And that was the only flaw of this match, which I liked that they had the stipulation. It made the match more important than it was. And I liked the interaction with Owens and Del Rio. And I liked that they're not getting along, but they know they had to get along because they had to win this match. But like you said, there was never any doubt that they would win this match. And I guess I don't know if there's any way to avoid that. I don't know if there's anybody, any other two wrestlers they could have faced where you could have potentially believed, oh man, these two people might be in the Money in the Bank over Owens and Del Rio. You know, the roster's not that deep with potential Money in the Bank type wrestlers to actually have a match where you don't know, you're not so sure of the outcome. Kind of hurt the match a little bit because I knew Owens and Del Rio were going to win, but it didn't take away for how good and entertaining the match ended up being.
Yeah, I agree with you in the fact that even though it was pretty obvious and blatantly so at some points for this particular match that Owens and Del Rio were going to win, the fact that they were able to continue teasing this tension between Owens and Del Rio tells me that, is it possible, and tell me if I'm off the top of my face here, is it possible that they're using a potential feud with Del Rio to test Owens' possible run as a babyface?
I actually disagree with that because I think that if the two were to have a feud against each other, they would position Del Rio to be the babyface in that encounter. And that's because Owens is already so good as a heel. And I know he has his fair share of fans, and that's because we appreciate his good heel work. But I would remind you, piggyback to last week, when all six of these guys opened up Raw on top of the ladders, Del Rio actually got a little C chant going for him with C. You know, he still gets that occasionally, and I don't know why. But he does have somewhat of fan support surrounding him where you can hear people audibly chanting C at him. So I would think he would be the babyface in a Del Rio Owens matchup.
I think it would be a mistake because I think that Owens has much more popularity at this point than Del Rio does. And while I agree that I love Owens' work as a heel, there's no doubt in my mind he is the best heel in the company. And that includes people who are meant to be heels and people who aren't meant to be heels. Reigns. But,
would you,
yeah.
Finish your thought.
I would love to see them test the waters with a Kevin Owens face run. I really would, because I genuinely feel like there is a significant portion of the fan base who would love to get behind him.
I want to ask you, what did you think of Del Rio's first face run he had after, I guess that was after he won, cash in his Money in the Bank. Didn't he have his little, his title run as a face, right?
No.
You better.
After he cashed in Money in the Bank, he was still a heel. It was when he was battling Big Show over the World Heavyweight title that he had his run as a babyface.
Right. And what did you think of his face run, though? Did you think it was a failure, or did you like him as a face at that time?
I think he actually seems to be more driven as a babyface than as a heel. But the problem with that is I think that the character that he portrays, the Mexican aristocratic character that he portrays, is much more naturally a heel.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think I remembered his face run being he was. I thought his matches were better. And I don't know why. Like maybe it was because he was more driven. But, you know, I preferred him as a face, to tell you the truth. And I understand his character leans more of the heel way, but I could see him being a hero for the Latino nation. That's just me.
They had an opportunity to make a Latino babyface hero, and they completely squandered it with Kalisto. I think that their next opportunity to do so is probably the guy who's in NXT right now is Andrade Almas, the former La Sombra. But we'll see what happens. All right, we move on, and that takes us to, I believe, the main event. Yes. First, before we get to the main event, let's talk about the backstage segment where the main event gets thrown to hell in high water with everybody else in the Money in the Bank match being brought to ringside. Best part of this, Kane bringing up his history with Shane. Fantastic. Couldn't help but bust out laughing. That being said, they completely convoluted the main event for tonight's show, even though we've already seen this match now three times in the last month. Go ahead.
I'll disagree. I mean, well, yeah, it did convolute it, I guess. But I wouldn't say that was bad.
Anytime Owens is on the commentary table is good for me. And if you're gonna have Owens out there and Jane out there and Jericho and Ambrose wrestling in the ring, it only makes sense to somehow get the other two members out there just so you can, you know, like, it is the go home show. So we need to promote Money in the Bank. Let's have all six of the competitors out there to close the show. The match itself, you know, they didn't really get heavily involved in the match till way at the end. They never interfered. The match ended cleanly with Ambrose hitting Dirty Deeds. So they didn't get themselves involved in the match itself. So it was only after the match that it all broke down into a brawl. So I didn't think they hurt the main event at all being out there.
I disagree, and the reason I disagree is because I felt that for as phenomenal as, and granted, not the wrestler to use phenomenal with, but for as phenomenal as Kevin Owens was on commentary tonight, I found him incredibly distracting. Because I found myself, instead of watching the match between Ambrose and Jericho, because we've seen it so many times over the course of the last month, I found myself listening to Kevin to hear what he would say next instead.
I thought the Ambrose and Jericho, this match on Raw was one of their best outings too, to tell you the truth.
I worry that all the constant interaction that they're having with each other is going to cause it to get to the point of why bother again. And we've talked about this before on this show here, and the fact that we probably know that Jericho's not going to be around a ton longer. But
right.
At the same time, the more interaction that Jericho and Ambrose have, the less I'm going to care about seeing them interact with each other. It's not a storyline that you can constantly go back to the well on, unlike the whole Fight Forever thing that they have going with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. All right, we have a caller right now, and I'm going to go ahead and let him introduce himself.
It's me. It's BDP.
Bang.
No, I'm kidding. It's Tony. What's up, bitches?
What up?
Oh, you know, just slanging drinks.
How was life at the bar for Game 5?
It was rowdy, but a lot of people left early. The good news is we'll get another game. Hopefully we'll get 7, and that'll be a busy night.
Well, I'd imagine you guys will probably be busy for 6 as well on Thursday.
Yeah, I won't be working that one.
Larry's going to convince you to cover
day.
SmackDown?
Well, I don't know. He could keep his ass out of the hospital, then yeah.
He covered Raw tonight after you covered SmackDown for him on Thursday. And I remember the message I sent you before we went on the air that, watch what's going to happen. Game 6 is going to happen. You're going to end up working. It's going to fuck Larry over for you doing SmackDown.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm on Fact or Fiction this week. Look for that, bitch.
Yeah. Who are you going against?
I don't know. Some new kid. I'm going to demolish him.
Poor noob. Didn't stand a chance.
Hi, Rick.
What up, man? Miss y'all.
All right, let's do some predictions. I got to get back to the bar.
He wasn't the one that was gone, Balin. Just saying.
I still miss people even though I'm gone.
There are two matches listed on the pre-show on Wikipedia, and one of them is Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler.
I don't care. Ziggler.
I may have chose a rather unfortunately timed way to put a description to this feud earlier in the show, so I won't repeat it. But yeah, let's just be done, shall we?
Yeah.
Ow, motherfucker. Gave myself a paper cut. All right. Pre-show match number 2, and one that I actually did talk about tonight because I'm interested in it, is Apollo Crews and Sheamus.
Tough one. I'm going to go with Apollo Crews. Keep in mind, I have no idea what happened tonight. I saw a bit of it before we changed the TVs to the game. So I saw Kane return. That was pretty interesting. But that's about all.
Sheamus pinned Zack Ryder with a bro kick. Apollo Crews came out and beat his ass afterwards.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to pick Cruz.
All right. Money in the Bank.
I know who I want to win, and I'm going to stick with it. Cesaro.
You just agreed with JD, Tony. Congratulations.
No, he agreed with me.
How about the tag team title four-way?
I don't know, man. I think New Day's going to hold on to it. I think that they'll lose it. Well, you know what? No, they're going to lose it tonight because they won't lose it on a one-on-one or a two-on-two. Who they're going to lose it to, I'm not sure. Let's just assume that they care about Gallows and Anderson enough to give them the win. Where do they go after that? They haven't really, you know, they don't really matter outside of AJ Styles. Fuck it. I'm going to pick Enzo and Cass. I know I'm wrong, but I'm going with it.
All right. How about the U.S. title match?
Rusev. Titus is just not. No.
Yeah, we were having that conversation earlier on in the show there that they're finally making Rusev look like a legitimate threat again. Hopefully it's not just to put the U.S. title on Titus O'Neil.
Yeah.
You know who actually had somebody suggest a feud with Rusev? Darren Young with Bob Backlund. And I can't help but feel like the mic work between Bob Backlund and Rusev would be fucking fantastic.
Possibly. The vignettes have been really hit or miss. Mostly miss.
I really enjoyed this particular one. I enjoyed tonight. It's a replay of the one that aired on SmackDown, but I still enjoyed it.
Okay. Next.
Women's tag team match, the match that I called happening the night after Extreme Rules, and sure enough.
Becky and Natty.
15 years in the making.
What's 15 years in the making?
Cena Styles.
2000.
Oh. No one wanted that 15 years ago. I hope AJ Styles wins because the turn itself was cool, but the reasoning behind it somewhat lackluster. I hope they change that tonight.
They didn't.
And yeah, they didn't. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well,
signing tonight.
Oh, that's what they have for?
Yeah.
For
contract.
Cena talks. Great.
Yeah.
Oh, did he go full
to
sell?
Oh, wait. He gave AJ two contracts to choose from. You can either sign the contract that allows you to bring the club to the ringside with you, or sign the contract to go one-on-one with me, John Cena.
What a bitch.
Do-do-do-do.
Be the man.
Be a star. Yeah, I'm going to go
Sorry,
with
Rick. Sorry, Rick. The way you phrased that, I felt the need to apado there.
Oh, I did. Thanks for the support.
How about the main event? World Heavyweight title on the line as Reigns and Rollins go at it.
I think Reigns is going to retain.
Do you think Cesaro attempts to cash in anytime soon if he does win?
No.
I could honestly see Cesaro, if he does win, I could see him waiting and saying he wants the main event match at WrestleMania. Announcing it before Mania, unlike Seth, who did it during the match at WrestleMania.
Yeah. I don't know. If he has that briefcase, then it's just... we've talked about this. I've talked about it many times. That briefcase could be used to be, you know, to do amazing things. They just have to actually do it.
I think the briefcase would look good on him on his little James Bond suit coming out to the
mm-hmm.
ring holding the briefcase.
He could,
yes, it
he
will.
Could totally... He could totally store his ripaway suit inside of the briefcase after he takes it off.
Yeah. Well,
just
I'm hoping
saying.
For the best.
All right, Tony. We'll talk to you next Monday where we'll actually get a chance to talk the fallout for Money in the Bank.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Go ahead.
Later.
Sean.
Deuces, bitches.
That is 411 Mania Raw reporter Tony Acero, the Down Since Day One co-host. Normally, the third man of the three of us here. Unfortunately, as we mentioned, Tony got called into work game 5 of the NBA Finals at the bar that he's employed at tonight, therefore was unable to watch Raw and unable to join us for the final reaction. Our executive producer
The man behind the ones and twos, Jimmy Christopher, also was unable to watch Raw due to a previous commitment. However, he will be doing predictions as well. So let's go ahead and bring in the executive producer right now, and let's get into the three of our pay-per-view predictions. Jimmy C., you ready?
Uh-huh.
All right, let's do this here. We start with the first pre-show match. Rick, we'll go with you. We'll do this in order, Rick, Jimmy, then me. First pre-show match, Rick.
First pre-show match, that would be
Baron and
Dolph. I'd say Baron wins.
Jimmy C?
Corbin wins, nobody cares.
The words right out of my mouth. Corbin wins, nobody cares. And now they have to find something else for Corbin to do. Pre-show match number two, Apollo Crews and Sheamus. Rick?
New generation, Apollo Crews, and he sets Sheamus off. Sheamus goes on a rampage after a loss.
Jimmy C?
Sheamus.
Once again, I'm with our executive producer. I think Sheamus wins dirty. And it continues the feud to Battleground, where they actually are on the pay-per-view itself, and that's where Apollo gets his win. Money in the Bank. This should be interesting. Rick?
Oh, this is hard. It's hard to pick between six people. I would say Dean Ambrose, which is a tricky pick because you know, he announced that he was going to win and that Ambrose Asylum. And, you know, we were talking about theories, and usually when someone announces that they're going to win a match, they usually don't win the match. But at the same time, we're talking about a potential Shield triple threat somewhere down the line at possibly WrestleMania, next year's WrestleMania. And for that to happen, I would think that Reigns or Rollins would need to be champion. The other one would need to win the Royal Rumble. And Dean Ambrose would need that Money in the Bank briefcase. So I'm going to stick with Dean Ambrose.
Jimmy C.
Del Rio.
Really? I have to say, of everybody in this match, he is the one person I didn't expect to have somebody have support for.
The only reason I pick him is because he's won one already. He has proven that he knows how to carry it. And I think being the guy with the most experience with the Money in the Bank, I feel like they're going to go in that direction. And everyone else is expecting Owens to win. Kind of like how the Intercontinental Championship match at WrestleMania was. Everyone was expecting Zayn or Owens or, you know, Ziggler to win or something like that. And then Ryder ends up winning. Well, this is how I feel about this match. And I'm going to go with Del Rio.
Real quick, before I give my prediction here, I want to give you guys our normal caller, Jason. Unfortunately, he's at work tonight and is unable to call in. However, we were discussing potential Money in the Bank scenarios here. And he had a very interesting one. And I wanted to pass it along to you guys to see what you thought. His scenario for this Money in the Bank is Jericho wins. Jericho then disappears to tour with Fozzy and does not come back until he's cashing in the contract.
That would be the best case scenario for Jericho. Only because Jericho, because the best thing for the contract might be just having the guy that has it disappear. So you never have any idea when it's going to be. But if that happens, the first time he comes back needs to be when he cashes it.
Yeah. I like that idea. And then, you know, you get Jericho, who's they've said many times he invented Money in the Bank but has never won one. You give him that win for a much-deserved win for creating this concept to begin with, and I like the idea of not seeing him until he cashes in somewhere farther down the line.
That's a great idea. I love it.
Make sure Jason listens to tonight's show here, because me and him actually had kind of a candid discussion. I'll be entirely honest with you. I didn't necessarily care for the concept, and the reason I say that is because I think it takes away from the importance of the Money in the Bank contract and having the Money in the Bank holder around. But that being said, I will agree with Jimmy C here in that he said that this is something that wouldn't have been done with the briefcase before, so it would be a novel concept to try, if not one that I necessarily would enjoy to see, personally. I'll let him know that I was outvoted, that you guys both agreed with him, though.
Jason, I mean, I wouldn't want him to win it and then announce I'm going on tour with Foggy with this thing. I would rather, you know, there be some kind of written in storyline that takes him out of action and explains the reasoning for his absence. Some kind of injury, you know, whatever they need to do.
So that way he can have somebody built in to feud with once he comes back, and if he comes back and wins the title. I mean, I could see that, but then you're convoluting the title picture with him taking the title off of somebody in addition to having somebody to feud with already.
Yeah.
And that'll depend on the other thing, too, is with the upcoming brand extension. And if the rumor that we're hearing, courtesy of Booker T, that they are going back to two separate heavyweight champions, does that mean that the Money in the Bank contract can be cashed in on either champion, since this will be a single briefcase, or will they cash in the contract before the brand split happens? That's another thing that we kind of have to take into concern here. Oh, by the way, my official prediction for this match is Kevin Owens. And I tossed and turned and debated on this one because I was debating between Cesaro and Owens for the better part of this entire show here. And I just feel like Kevin Owens is at the position that they need good guys for the main event level, and Kevin Owens is ready. He is above the Intercontinental title at this point. He's been above the Intercontinental title for a while. They need to strike while the iron is hot with this guy. He is both equally hated and loved by the fan base because he has his supporters and his detractors. And I just feel like the opportunity to make a main event level star in Kevin Owens is there. They just need to take advantage of it. With that being said, I'm going to let Jimmy C go first on this one because this is kind of his specialty. Tag team division, Jimmy C.
You know what? I'm going to do another blind shot in the dark just to piss everybody off. I'm going to go Vaudevillains because I think the championship would do them the most good. I mean, sure, the tag team division needs a spark, and everyone's talking about, oh, the club is going to win because it needs a spark. If it needs a spark, let your most over tag team, being the New Day, feud with the club and have them become something in a rivalry in order to get to the titles. That way you can also use Enzo and Cass to start going towards the titles and play off that storyline from Payback. Vaudevillains.
Yeah. I like the idea of Vaudevillains, and honestly, I don't think they're that much of a dark horse. I actually think they do have the potential to win this match. However, I'm not going to predict them to win. I still am going to stick with my prediction of the club. I think the club gets the titles here, and not to say they need it, but I think they get the titles here and stand strong with it, with AJ Styles, and which you'll find out from my prediction later on, a fourth member of the Bullet Club.
Jimmy C?
What?
It has been said that great minds think alike. This is the second time that I am agreeing with you for the exact same reason. I am picking the Vaudevillains because I think Enzo and Cash chasing the Vaudevillains for the tag titles, after the way things went down at Payback, as well as the fact that you could have the New Day feud with the club and not have to involve the tag team titles in that feud. I think the Vaudevillains win the four-way.
Well, now I want to change my answer because I don't want the same one as Ari.
Rick, you start us here on
the
US title.
I'm definitely, definitely sticking with the Vaudevillains, though, and I think it does everybody the most good. US title match. I'm actually ironic. I'm rewatching Raw right now, and I'm watching the Rusev Titus segment here where he put him out on the floor and everything. And I'm going to stick with Rusev with that one just because I don't foresee Titus ever holding like singles gold. It just, I don't see it. I don't. Maybe they're going to get behind him because he's such a big representative to their company. But right now, I do not see it.
Rick?
Yeah, and I was actually going to say this before you had mentioned something earlier about the next potential opponent for Rusev. But I think Rusev defeats Titus and clutches in that accolade and does not let go of it until Darren Young and Bob Backlund come running down to the ring to get him off of his former tag team partner, friend, whatever. And your next feud starts right there between Darren Young and Rusev.
I could totally see that. I'm picking Rusev to retain here, if only because I think Rusev with the U.S. title has been one of the best things the WWE has been doing since they put the belt back on Rusev when he beat Kalisto for it. And honestly, I'm hoping that they continue to cash in on the momentum that Rusev has as the United States champion, because this belt right here and the way that he has been portrayed over the course of the last couple of weeks on Raw has made him relevant once again. Rick?
Yes.
Divas tag. Or women's
Divas
tag.
Tag.
Sorry, they're not divas anymore.
They're women's. Natty and Becky win. They defeat Dana to win this match, which causes Charlotte to have a fit and blame Dana for their loss. And she kicks Dana to the curb. And since Paige got a pinfall victory on Charlotte, and Charlotte's against Dana, and Natty and Becky wins this tag team match, then we're going to get a nice little battle royal for the Divas Championship come next pay-per-view, or maybe even next Monday after the pay-per-view. Who knows?
I know you don't care, Jimmy C, but I need a prediction.
Kalisto.
Are you saying Kalisto is a woman under that mask?
Do you know whether or not he is?
He doesn't wear a shirt, so.
Maybe he's just a flat-chested woman.
Right. God, I could not give less fucks about this match. Man. Could not give less fucks. I'll pick who's in it?
That is all you need to know. Becky and Natty against Charlotte and Dana.
Yeah, Becky and Natty, I guess, for no other reason than, you know, dumb shit is dumb. Continue. Hey, what?
They just established Paige as the number one contender to the women's title tonight by having her beat the champion. And they mentioned the fact that Paige just beat the champion specifically, so I think she's next in line for a title match. Therefore, I think the swerve is on, and I think Charlotte and Dana win this match when Charlotte taps Becky. Now we get to the
big
match.
You don't like my idea of a multi-women battle royale?
You know what I could see, Rick? How about this? How about all four of these women, Paige and Sasha, in a six-pack challenge at SummerSlam? How's that sound?
A six-pack, over-the-top rope, table match, ladder match for the women's championship. Holla, holla, holla.
Playa. I stepped on your teddy. Sorry. Cena, AJ, Rick.
All right. AJ signed the contract where the club will not be allowed at the ringside, correct? Correct,
okay.
Harry? That's correct. So,
okay.
So it's just banning Anderson and Gallows from ringside, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
so
Anderson and Gallows
I
know where you're going with this.
Yes. We get the most anticipated debut
of Finn Balor, who helps AJ Styles defeat John Cena, which, there you go. I'll just leave it at that. That's my prediction.
Jimmy C.
If anybody knows anything about John Cena, it's that he always loses the first match. Hey, quiet. He always loses the first match of a three-match series, so I'm going to go with AJ Styles.
I'm going to try to say this as undickishly as possible, but I'm not sure I'm physically capable of doing so. Fuck you, TNA. Cena wins all. And apparently DC thinks my prediction is funny.
You just dropped it.
No, he likes
in front
of his
of
daddy.
Kid.
I'm officially predicting Cena in this match because I think that, much like the WrestleMania match against Jericho, this is going to be Cena's welcome to the big leagues. He's already put Roman over twice. He lost to Jericho at Mania, and now he's going to lose to Cena here at Money at the Bank.
Not if Finn Balor has something to do with it. Main event.
Roman Reigns doubts all the naysayers by finally defeating the champion that he's never defeated, and he wins.
Jimmy C.
Gosh, I'll pick Roman to win only because I don't think they're going to hot shot it back to Rollins just yet.
I think Roman wins, but at the same time, I would not be at all surprised with some kind of double pinfall screwy finish to help set up the re-breaking off of the two titles.
What do you think of maybe the possibility, since they put so much emphasis on Rollins saying that he's going to actually do this by himself, what about the possibility of Roman winning, but Roman gets help to win? So it's Roman that doesn't do it by himself.
The only possible extension of that I could see would be an involvement of the Usos, and at that point you would have to turn the Usos and Reigns heel, and I don't think the WWE will do that.
It will be an interesting pay-per-view, to say the least.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're looking at a potential pay-per-view of the year caliber show here, and I'm looking forward to joining Patrick Ketza, Sean Garmer, Paul Weezer, and Gary Vaughn, Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max, this Sunday night after the pay-per-view on the W2M Network. You can listen to the five of us break down the show in detail. In addition, next Monday night here, Jimmy C. and Tony will give their thoughts, and if Rick isn't able to call in to Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max to give his thoughts, we'll hear from Rick on next week's episode of the Raw Reaction as well. Jimmy C., thank you for your prediction, sir.
Yes.
For your final reaction.
Okay.
Here, here on that one. I missed my sound effects. All right, favorite match or moment?
Okay, let's see. Favorite match or moment? I'm going to go with tag team match was good. Zayn and Cesaro didn't have enough time for me to give them favorite. I'm going to go with the main event. I thought that Jericho and Ambrose had a really good match, and I know while you thought it was convoluted, I kind of thought that the other four members of the Money in the Bank match kind of stayed clear and let Ambrose and Jericho do their thing in the ring, and they put on a really good match, so that was my favorite moment.
How about your least favorite match or moment?
I think you know where I'm going with this one. I talked about it in the corner, and the Divas match. Harry, you didn't really give your thoughts after I mentioned it, but I just thought Charlotte looked really bad, and I'm not just saying that because she lost. I'm talking about the whole body of work in that matchup. She did not look good.
Uh, I mean, I kind of gave my thoughts before you went into your whole Cajun Corner rant about it, about the fact that I don't think that it should have been to Paige, since Paige has been so inconsistently on television. That being said, I'm not entirely disopposed to them establishing Paige as the number one contender, because I would argue that out of the women in the Divas division right now, or the women's division, whatever the fuck they want to call it, Paige is probably the best worker. So if that means Paige getting more screen time going forward, then I'm all for that.
Yeah. But I just wanted to see a more competitive match and then have Dana throw Charlotte into the ring, into a rampage. That was my biggest gripe with it.
Well, I can see why you're having issue with it, in the fact that the match only went about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And other than the Sheamus and Zack Ryder squash, it was easily the shortest thing on the show. We're talking by like at least 6 minutes shorter than the next shortest match, which would have been Sami and Cesaro. I'm going off of the match times on Larry's Raw report. I didn't actually physically time out the matches myself. This is what I'm seeing in front of me. All right, we move on. Overall show rating.
Tonight's show was pretty good, especially for a go-home show of Raw. You know, a lot of times the go-home shows don't have that much action. This one didn't have that much action, but it was still very entertaining, and not a whole lot of stuff on there that I would consider bad. Most of it was good. So I'm giving it a 8.
All right, and who is your MVP?
Kevin Owens. We talked about how good he is on the mic. His interaction with just about everybody is stellar. I love his commentary. I love his thing with Del Rio. I love his thing with Shane. This was Kevin Owens' night, and I would think that if we added up all the MVPs of all our final reactions, Kevin Owens would probably be way ahead of a lot of the other members of the roster. Wouldn't you agree?
Once I finish my reaction here, I will go ahead and further your thought process on that. Trust me.
All right.
Hey, Rick.
So you, yes.
Flip the script.
I was about to.
Okay, then.
Harry, what was your favorite match or moment of tonight's episode of Raw?
The Shield triple threat thing inside of the Ambrose Asylum, with the exception of the physical interaction at the very tail end there. I do believe that a little bit of that should have been saved going forward. I'm okay with the teasing of dissension between Ambrose and Reigns. I'm okay with the physicality between Ambrose and Rollins. I'm okay with the physicality between Ambrose and between Rollins and Reigns. I think having all three at the same time was a mistake tonight. But at the same time, everything that preceded it was excellent, even if that crowd wasn't entirely sure how to react for a vast majority of that segment.
They won't say nothing bad about that New Orleans crowd now. That's my people.
No, by and large, that crowd was pretty good. But for that particular segment, they were very inconsistent.
Yeah. So what was your least favorite match or moment of tonight's episode?
There really wasn't anything bad.
That's what I said.
Like, usually it's really simple to pick something out here. And, yeah, you could go with the women's match, but at the same time, if your expectations of the women's division are that high, you're bound to be disappointed most of the weeks in the effort that they put in. As far as my least favorite match or moment for tonight's show goes, I think I'm going to end up going with the I think I'm going to go with the bickering between Shane and Stephanie. I think it's obvious where it's leading, and it's just kind of going to be a case of it's going to be difficult to get there.
That's a good pick. I'm mad I didn't think of that, but I really didn't like that woman's stuff. Okay, what was your overall show rating?
I'm a little bit lower than you, but at the same time, by go-home standards, I don't think you could have asked for a lot more from a show. I gave it a 7.5.
And who was your MVP?
What was it you said if we went back and tallied all the MVPs since we've taken over as a three-man crew, who we would select? That
yeah.
Kevin Owens would probably be the runaway leader?
Yeah.
Yeah, add another one to his total. I'm picking Kevin Owens.
There you go.
Between his performance in the tag match, his performance backstage in the segment with Shane, and then him constantly cracking me up on commentary during the main event to the point I was distracted from the main event that involved one of my favorite wrestlers and another guy whose work I really enjoy. There is no doubt in my mind this episode of Raw tonight was the Kevin Owens show. It's KO's world, man. We just live in it. You going to join us for Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max on Sunday, sir?
Dude, of course I will. I want that VIP phone call, man. You see that 337 up? Pass
that
me through.
That 337 flashes and Sean jumps.
Tell him that.
Jimmy C, you got anything to add here? Did we lose our producer? He's probably dealing with his son.
Hey, I was glad to be treated to some toddler giggles at the end of the show. That was cool. My kids are asleep, so.
DC's a cool little dude. For our executive producer, Jimmy Christopher, his son, DC, Tony Acero, Rick Balin, I'm here.
Oh, no, that mute button strikes again. For the host doing the most with the least, Harry Broadhurst. For the man in the Cajun corner, Rick Balon, I'm your MVP, most valuable producer, Jimmy Christopher. We'll see you Sunday for whatever the hell it is that Harry was talking about with, you know, Wheezy or whatever the hell his name is. And hopefully the man from the Cajun corner will be there, so you'll have something worth listening to. For those two guys, for Tony Acero, who's out doing his job because he's a hell of a citizen and an employee, we'll see you next time, guys. This has been the Raw Reaction, brought to you by DeMarco Wrestling Radio. Hey, Rick, hit your line, bro.
On a while, bitches.